No, he's not. He's on the work session. See, if you like, you know, Kevin.
I'd like to bring the House Committee on General Government, Consumer Protection into session. It is Tuesday, April 19th. We've got a pretty full agenda. We will be carrying some bills over, obviously. But we're going to start out with a public hearing on HJR number 6. Jan, would you give us a brief description of HJR 6?
Mr. Chair and committee members, it proposes a constitutional amendment to allow the legislature to provide for a consolidation of Metropolitan Service District with a county. But there is a dash one amendment before you that proposes a constitutional amendment to allow the Legislative Assembly to provide for the consolidation of two or more counties and replacement of existing county charters with a new charter for a consolidated county.
Thank you. And committee before us is Representative Mitch Greenlick. If you'd introduce yourself for the record, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I'm State Representative Mitch Greenlick, House District 33, Northwest Portland, and all the way out to North Plains. I brought HJR 6 to begin a discussion, and my intention originally is to talk about consolidation in the metropolitan area, which I think we'll get to one of these days. I think having three counties in the Portland metropolitan area ultimately doesn't make a lot of sense. But that was the start of the discussion, but as I began talking about this to people, it came to me that we have another problem. And the problem is that eventually we may need to merge some counties in this state. As the timber revenues disappear and as counties get into financial problems, we ultimately are going to have to think about that, and there's a constitutional block to doing that in an easy way. So I'm proposing the Dash 1 amendments to you. I hope you'll take them seriously and actually think of working them. And what HJR 6 does is put on the ballot a constitutional amendment that, if passed, would allow the state to merge counties with the approval of the citizens of those counties. So I won't mention counties, but, you know, we have 36 counties now, but we haven't always. We've had a variety of counties. We've had a number from 10 to 36. And as the financial realities come home, even S&P downrates the credit rating of the United States, we are going to have counties in trouble, and the citizens of those counties are going to want us, I predict, to be able to consolidate those counties. All this measure does, if approved by the people, is gives us the potential to do that with the approval of the voters of those counties. And I think it would be a very useful tool for us to have in our toolkit as we go forward. And I ask you to consider working it and moving it to the voters of the state so the voters of the state can have their say on this issue. Fast enough?
Thank you. Particular questions of Representative Greenlick on this?
Representative Wisnett. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, when we talked about this, I was concerned when I heard you're going to change it. I thought that we had laws to cover this because we did discuss it in the last legislative session. But according to the staff summary, LC's come back and said we can't do it within all counties.
Some counties we could.
Depending on where they have a charter or not.
Exactly.
So and so LC is comfortable. You've talked to them with the draft that you have, the dash one, and
they
as far as providing us what we need and hopefully don't have to use.
Mr. Co-Chairs, LC suggests that the dash one form would allow us to, by statute, merge counties on the approval of the voters of those counties. This isn't something we could just willy-nilly do, and as I would be happy to be able to do with a couple of counties, but it just gives us the potential, but only with the approval of the voters of those counties.
Follow up. So, but if they don't and they have no funds, we've talked about that in Judiciary Committee this session about not having public safety, then your bill doesn't allow the state to divide it or to decide how to close the doors.
Not at all. What it does is it gives us the ability to prepare new charters for those counties and submit them to the voters of those counties.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I think it's something that we need to address. I'd like to, I'm okay to move in the dash one and then carry it over. I'd like to talk to LC again to see if we need to cover what happens if they say no, because I'm afraid this could be a reality.
Representative Sheehan.
Thank you. Representative Greenlee, does this only apply to the metro area, the tri-counties right now? Is it just...
No, this is an entirely... Actually, it's an entirely different bill from the one in front of it.
Okay, so the...
It doesn't relate to metro or to the tri-counties. It simply relates to our ability to merge any counties in the state with the approval of their voters.
And, Chair, follow-up? And so how would that... Can you explain how that process would go? Would the county petition to do that? Would the county commissioners ask us to put that forward? Or?
Well, I can't imagine we would hope to get a successful merger if we didn't have it moving forward from the counties themselves. And because, I mean, people sort of have affiliations to their counties. I found that out with the original bill, and I talk about merging Washington, Monoma, and Clackamas. I got, you know, people with their hair on fire even thinking about it. But I think we're going to have some real financial problems in some counties, and it would seem to me, for example, we have a couple of places where we have regional public health departments rather than single county health departments, because it's just not feasible to run the libraries and the prisons and do the things. So I think they would have to come to us. We would create a new charter, and we would submit that charter for the approval of the voters of those counties.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair?
Not yet. Is there anybody else signed up to testify in public hearing on this bill?
There wasn't when I looked.
Not seeing any. So with that, I'll close the public hearing on HJR 6 and open a work session on HJR 6. Representative Wisnett.
Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 1 amendment stated March 31st, 2011 to House Joint Resolution 6.
Representative Wisnett moves the Dash 1 amendment dated March 31st, 2011 be adopted into HJR 6. Discussion? Seeing none, is there any opposition to adopting the Dash 1? Seeing none, Dash 1 amendments are adopted, and I'll close the work session on HJR 6.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair.
So, with that committee, we will open a work session on House Bill 2020.
Mr. Chair and committee members, House Bill 2020 was heard in the committee earlier. It requires state agencies to report to Ways and Means for each division or unit of the agency the ratio of employees to supervisors. The Dash 2 amendment was adopted last week, and the measure has no revenue impact and no fiscal, a fiscal statement is issued. There is no subsequent referral on the measure.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Wisnett.
I move House Bill 2020 to the floor with due pass as amended recommendation.
Representative Wisnett moves House Bill 2020 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? So, Jan, the fiscal on this?
The fiscal is indeterminate. It mentions the workload that the staff in the legislative fiscal office would be required to do, but that it is an indeterminate impact according to the fiscal office.
And this has no subsequent Ways and Means on it?
That's correct.
Interesting. So, with that, we have a motion on the table. Any other discussion on House Bill 2020? Seeing none, Tamara, can we have a roll call vote, please?
Representative Cameron?
Excused.
Representative Clem?
Aye.
Representative Conger?
Aye.
Representative Matthews?
Aye.
Vice Chair Sheehan?
Yes.
Vice Chair Smith?
Aye.
Co-Chair Whitson?
Aye.
Co-Chair Holley?
Aye.
Buckley and Griffin.
House Bill 2020, having received the votes, is passed to the floor. And I will close the work session on House Bill 2020.
Do you want to think about a carrier?
The carrier on this particular bill. We'll go ahead and let Representative Buckley explain this bill. With that, I'll close the... close the work session. So I'm going to stand at ease for just a moment, please. Let's check in and see where we're at with... A brief description of 2920.
Mr. Chair and committee members, it allows the Secretary of State to conduct audits of the use of funds transfers from the state to counties, including video lottery revenues, state highway funds, cigarette tax revenues, and OLCC funds. And there are no amendments before you. There's no revenue impact on the bill, and there is no fiscal impact either.
Thank you. And we just signed up. I think we have Representative Nolan. You'd identify yourself for the record, please.
2020.
Good morning, Chair Holvey, Chair Wisnett, members of the committee. My name is Mary Nolan. I represent the citizens of House District 36 in the legislature. Thanks for hearing this bill. It is a great bill because it allows for review of fairly substantial transfers of funds from the state to the counties for a variety of reasons. It gives the Secretary of State the authority to do that. It doesn't mandate that those audits be conducted, and therefore it doesn't have a fiscal impact. But it allows for oversight, which in the past hasn't been there. And as these kinds of transfers have grown and grown and grown, I'd submit to you that it has become important to at least have the ability to assure that those transfers are being conducted appropriately and that the partnership that those transfers represents between the state and our various counties is an effective one. So it gives us that tool. It allows the Secretary to assure that there is accountability on the way those funds are transferred and how those funds are used to benefit public good at the county level. I commend it to your attention.
Thank you. Are there questions for Representative Nolan? House Bill 2920.
Is your committee awake yet, Mr.
We have a three-page agenda. That could be an advantage.
Great. Thanks for your time.
Thank you. Is there any other...
Nobody else.
Nobody else signed up. Is there anybody else that would like to testify on this bill?
I got him.
Someone running up last minute. Could you identify yourself for the record, please?
Co-Chair Holvey, Co-Chair Wisnett, members of the committee, Mike Eliason with the Association of Oregon Counties. I'll be extremely brief. We have no opposition to the measure. I just point out a couple of things very quickly. I believe Secretary of State already has the authority to audit the use of any public funds. So I'm not entirely sure if the bill is needed, although, again, that's completely a policy decision, and we have no opposition to it. All counties already conduct yearly financial audits that are then sent to the Secretary of State's office, and those audits have to be in conformance, done in conformance with, I think, the rules that are already in place by the Secretary of State. Just wanted to put those quickly on the record. But again, if you should decide to go forward with that, we have no particular opposition. Thanks.
Thank you. Questions for Mr. Eliason? Not seeing any at this point. Would the Secretary of State's office care to come up? Identify yourself for the record, please. Thank you.
I'm Gary Pack, Deputy Secretary of State. I'm happy to answer any questions on the bill.
Well, one is just now interjected that the Secretary of State already has this authority.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, this is sort of an ongoing discussion that has been taking place between the Secretary of State's office and the legislature for many, many years. The Constitution designates the Secretary of State as the auditor of all public accounts, and read literally, that means all public accounts, without distinction between where they're located, as long as public funds are involved. We see bills like this a lot where the legislature is giving express authority in statute for us to audit. We appreciate that when it's discretionary, as this bill is, saying, let's be clear, you can audit these transfers or these accounts or these uses of funds. That lets us know for sure without the ongoing debate between the role of the Constitution versus the role of statutes, that we can go in and audit these accounts as we evaluate them based on risk, as we've discussed in this committee before.
So have you ever conducted such audit as described in this bill?
Mr. Chair, I would have to go back and check on that. There are a number of pieces in this bill. Fund transfers, video lottery revenues, state highway funds, cigarette tax revenues, all of these are areas that we audit, generally speaking. Whether or not we've specifically looked at the transfer from the state to the county, I'm not sure. I can get back to you on that, though.
Okay. Not in your recollection, anyway, that is specifically about the transfers from state to counties. Thank you. Any other questions? Representative Sheehan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is this something that a member of the legislature could ask? Could you run this audit or this report, and then you could just do that? It sounds like we don't really need this statute, but it sounds like there's some sort of disconnect and something's not happening. Has anything been brought to you that's been rejected? Or,
Mr. Chair, Representative Sheehan, not to my knowledge. We get a lot of requests or suggestions for audit topics, which we keep track of in a database, and as we set audit schedules, as resources become available, we evaluate them based on risk, so risk being the amount of funds involved, the source of the funds, the opportunities that they may get misspent. Again, to my knowledge, I can't speak directly this morning as to whether or not a request like this has come in or not. But I can follow up on that. I think more fundamentally, we see interest among the legislature in ensuring that there is accountability in the funds that are being spent in various places, and so we appreciate having some statutory guidance that says, hey, look, here's another good place to look.
Thank you. So you see this expressly stated addition to the statute is perhaps clarifying and giving you a little bit more statutory direction.
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. So, no other questions. I'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2920 and open a work session on House Bill 2920.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Wisnett.
I move House Bill 2920 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Wisnett moves House Bill 2920 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Seeing none, Tamara, can we have a vote, please?
Representative Cameron.
Excused.
Representative Cloud.
Excused.
Representative Conger.
Aye.
Representative Matthews.
Aye.
Vice Chair Sheehan.
Yes.
Vice Chair Smith.
Aye.
Co-Chair Whitson.
Aye.
Co-Chair Holby.
Aye, and if we could have Representative Clem vote.
Yes.
Representative Clem.
Aye.
House Bill 2920, having received the required votes, is passed to the floor, and we'll have Representative Nolan carry that bill.
Thanks.
With that, I'll close the work session on House Bill 2920.
I just had some discussions before I started getting mad.
Let's go back to the top. I'd like to open a work session, House Bill 2062. Representative Wisnett, are you ready for this one?
Yes, sir.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2062 to the floor about recommendation as to passage and the bill refer to the Committee on Rules.
Representative Wisnett moves House Bill 2062 to the floor without recommendation as to passage and the bill be referred to the Committee on Rules. Is there discussion?
You already have a copy.
Extra copy is good, though. Seeing none, can we have a vote, please?
Representative Cameron.
Excused.
Representative
Clinton.
Aye. Representative Conger.
Aye.
Representative Matthews.
Aye.
Vice Chair Sheehan.
Yes.
Vice Chair Smith.
Aye.
Co-Chair Whitson.
Aye.
Co-Chair Holby.
Aye. House Bill 2062, having received the required votes, is moved to rules. I'll close the work session, House Bill 2062. Open a work session on House Bill 2322. Jan, would you give us a description of House Bill 2322? Kind of skipped over that last one for you.
Mr. Chair, committee members, this bill prohibits the governor and the Department of Administrative Services from reducing the amount allotted to the Department of Revenue from the general fund after DAS declares that there's a projected budget deficit. There's a dash one amendment before you that declares an emergency effective on passage. There is no revenue impact, and a fiscal statement has been issued.
Thank you. Representative Wisnett, do you have a motion on this one?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I move the dash one amendments dated March 17, 2011 to House Bill 2322.
Representative Wisnett moves the dash one amendments dated March 17, 2011 to House Bill 2322. Discussion? Is there any objection to the dash one amendments? Seeing none, they're so adopted. Representative Wisnett.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2322 as amended to the floor without recommendation as to passage and the bill be referred to Ways and Means by prior reference.
Representative Wisnett moves House Bill 2322 as amended to the floor without recommendation as to passage and the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. Discussion? Seeing none, can we have a vote, please?
Representative Cameron.
Excused.
Representative Clem.
Aye.
Representative Conger.
No.
Representative Matthews.
Aye.
Vice Chair Sheehan.
No.
Vice Chair Smith.
Aye.
Co-Chair Whitson.
Aye.
Co-Chair Holby.
Aye. House Bill 2322, having received required votes, is moved to Ways and Means. And I will close the work session on House Bill 2322. Open a work session, House Bill 3000.
Mr. Chair, I move dash three amendments dated March 15, 2011 to House Bill 3000.
Representative Wisnett moves the dash three amendments dated March 15, 2011 to House Bill 3000. Discussion, Representative Clem.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. You may recall some time ago I was here on this bill, and everything that's in the bill is deleted. This is really a placeholder for a different concept, which has alarmed a number of people around who saw the original bill and wondered why we would be moving such a bill, which I can understand. The Dash 3 amendments modify the current statute around the ability for a contracting agency to purchase agricultural goods that are produced in Oregon, even if they're not the absolute lowest bid, to apply to other goods and services that the contracting agency may purchase, like desks or some computers or chairs, with the exception of construction. So in this case, construction is not, there's not even an allowance for construction to be gone outside of the low bid system in order to buy from an Oregon entity. That's exempted in the Dash 3s. So, you know, the way this would work is if DAS or some agency is doing procurement of these chairs, and some company from Argentina can do it for, you know, $38, and somebody from Oregon can do it for $42. Well, in that case, it's not quite within 10%. So then, in that case, they'd have to make a written finding why they were buying from the Oregon company instead of the international company. If it were $39 from an Oregon company and $38 from the Argentina chair maker, the agency would be allowed to purchase the chair from an Oregon entity instead of the foreign entity, even though it technically wasn't the low bid. And what we found was there are some times where the agencies wanted to buy from an Oregon company to help the job climate here, not from the overseas competitor. And unless it was literally the low bid, in a tie situation, they could not buy from the Oregon company. And we did this last session on ag products. It passed unanimously both chambers, and so the concept here is apply it to other types of products the state may buy. It's not mandatory. The agency doesn't have to do it. In many cases, they probably won't because they're worried about their budgets. But I think at least there's some value in using the purchasing power of the state to help Oregon companies instead of foreign competitors or out-of-state competitors, to the extent it's reasonable, obviously, with the sort of fiscal situation. That's it, F3s.
Thank you. Questions? Representative Matthews.
Is this just specific to state agency right now?
I gave away my Dash 3s. I do not believe so, because the original statute came from a county who wanted to buy local, and they were also prohibited with their own county monies by state law from doing anything other than a little bid. So I'm not
legislative counsel, but it refers to contracting agencies, I believe covers any contracting agency, state or county.
Follow up to that. I think that's great. We had a situation where local Ford dealership was trying to purchase, or City of Gresham needed to purchase a fleet of police vehicles, went through a local Ford dealership. I believe that the total was about $7 or $14 over the bid that came out of Wilsonville, and Wilsonville got the contract. Really disturbing when we're spending local money out of the area. And we have an issue in Gresham called Try Local First. I suggest everybody gets on board with that program, but I think this will aid that as well. So, thank you.
Representative Conger.
Representative Clem.
Hello.
Hi there.
Hello.
Do you have any idea how this is working out from the bill that was passed last session? I mean, have you heard?
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Conger. So there is a gentleman at DAS. I don't know if he's here. He walked me through what's starting to happen in their purchasing of foods from Oregon entities. And I got to tell you, I was not real optimistic, given it's a may, not a shall, that anybody would do anything with it. So I thought, and I think some newspaper wrote an article about how it wouldn't really be that effective, but it sounded good. But they actually told me are having agencies compete with each other to who can buy the most local. And that they are having a lot of contact from Oregon fishermen and Oregon farmers to DAS saying, hey, how do we get in on this? We want to sell direct. We want to get some state contracts. We've never been able to sell to state before because we were never compete with, you know, the frozen shrimp coming in from Korea or from, you know, wherever, Vietnam. We'd like to sell our stuff for the jails or whoever would sell shrimp and crab. And so it is apparently changing purchasing behavior by the state to support Oregon businesses first.
Excellent.
Much to my surprise and pleasure.
Absolutely.
So any other discussion?
That's a fire.
Seeing none, we do have a...
There's somebody here.
Just a quick comment. Representative Sheehan.
Just a quick comment.
Excuse me, I didn't see your hand go up.
No problem. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick comment. I really like this bill, having this sort of consideration for businesses that have just been hammered and that aren't as competitive as other companies from other states because of things that we've done as far as regulation and taxation with Measure 67 especially. I think this is a nice way to provide some relief to those companies in Oregon. So I really like this, and I think it should pass.
Thank you for that. Is there any objection to adopting the -3 amendment? Seeing none, the -3 amendment is adopted, and I will close the work session on House Bill 3000.
I'm not hugging you, doing my best.
Let's have a hug.
Sorry. So is 3038 ready? Move.
I don't have a tell.
No, that for the rest.
Fantastic.
That's right.
Anywhere you start.
I will wear my fantastic muffler.
A recommendation.
Yeah.
I'm going to skip down to, I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 3488.
Where are we now?
3488.
Debbie's.
This is referred to another committee. Yes.
Mr. Chair and committee members, House Bill 3488, it raises the threshold for requiring a cost analysis or a feasibility determination for the procurement from $250,000 to $2 million. It requires a contracting agency to include the agency's indirect overhead costs in the cost analysis, and it removes a prohibition on proceeding with the procurement if the contractor's costs are lower solely because the contractor pays employees less than the agency does. Deletes requirement the contracting agency is to prepare an appropriation request to hire or obtain resources necessary to perform the services that the agency determined would be less costly to perform in-house but lacked the necessary staff and the resources to do so. Declares an emergency effective on passage. There are no amendments before you. There is no revenue impact, and a fiscal statement has been issued.
In committee, where we are going to be taking a vote to move this bill to rules. And with that, Representative Wisnett, do you have a motion? On this one?
No.
See you another day.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3488 to the floor without recommendation as to passage, and the bill be referred to House Committee on Rules.
Representative Wisnett moves House Bill 3488
without recommendation
as to passage, and the bill be referred to the House Committee on Rules. Discussion? Seeing none, could we have a vote, please?
Representative Cameron.
Excused.
Representative Crum?
Yes.
Representative Conger?
Aye.
Representative Matthews?
Aye.
Vice Chair Sheehan?
Yes.
Vice Chair Smith?
Yes.
Chair Whitson?
Aye.
Chair Holby?
Aye. House Bill 3488, having received required votes, is moved to rules. Close the work session on House Bill 3488. And I'd like to open a work session on House Bill 3590.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Wisnett.
I was going to read it. It's ready to go.
Jan, would you go ahead and give us a description of House Bill 3590?
Mr. Chair and committee members, this is the bill that was heard earlier this month that permits a child who weighs more than 40 pounds and is shorter than 4 foot 9 to use either a child safety system designed for children weighing more than 40 pounds or in a booster seat. And there were no amendments adopted. There's no revenue impact. There is a minimal fiscal impact with no statement issued.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3590 to the floor, but do pass recommendation.
And we had no amendments to this bill?
No amendments.
Okay. Representative Wisnett moves House Bill 3590 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Seeing none, could we have a vote, please, Tamara?
Representative Cameron.
Excused.
Representative Clemmer.
Aye.
Representative Conger.
Aye.
Representative Matthews.
Aye.
Vice Chair Sheehan.
Yes.
Vice Chair Smith.
Yes.
Co-Chair Wisnett.
Aye.
Co-Chair Holby.
Aye. House Bill 3590, having received the required votes, is passed to the floor with a due pass recommendation. And I'll close the work session. House Bill 3590, assign Representative Boone to carry that bill. There she is. She looks happy.
Thank you.
Oh. And I guess I'm lying. So I do note that before we move on, we were going to carry over House Bill 3387, but I understand there's people that have traveled more than 100 miles, and so and a little bit later I will open that up for public hearing, not right at the moment yet, though, to get those people on the record.
Very nice.
So... I'd like to open a work session on House Bill 3241. Jan, could you give House Bill 3241, describe the bill for us, please?
Mr. Chair and committee members, this is the bill that prohibits a person from picketing or engaging in disruptive activities at a service for a deceased person. The Dash 3 amendments were adopted last week. It replaces the original measure. There is no revenue impact, and there is a minimal fiscal impact with no statement issued.
Chair. Representative Wisnett.
I move House Bill 3241 to the floor, but do pass as amended recommendation.
Representative Wisnett moves House Bill 3241 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion?
As amended.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Amended.
Do we already adopt the amendments?
We did.
Yes.
As amended.
Dash 3.
Sure. Representative Smith.
I want to put some things on the legislative record. The one of the things that the legislature is finding by passing this bill is that the hosts of a funeral have expression rights that are worthy of protection, and that due to these legislative deliberations have manifested a reasonable time, place, and manner allowance for balancing those expression rights with the expression rights of others is in fact a reasonable time, place, and manner restriction on people who'd like to interfere with the expression exercise of the host and holder of a funeral. And there may be things for so full stop. There may be things that we want in the Senate to put in terms of including some additional legislative fact-finding and some whereas statements that the sponsors of the bill might want to work with us on doing that I think would be helpful. But I think in the interest, we haven't put in every whereas statement that we might want to put in for purposes of hitting the timeline, but that might be a helpful thing going forward.
Other discussion?
Just one question. Is that a full stop? Is that a full stop? A reference? Is that a ham radio thing?
Yeah, it's from my my trucker day.
Thanks.
I know that I'd like to have Andrea Meyer come up if she'd like to. I know if you identify yourself for the record, I know you expressed some opposition to this bill and this amendment previously and didn't really have an extreme amount of time to elaborate on your opposition, but I'm going to give you that opportunity right now.
Chair Holby, members of the committee, Andrea Meyer, legislative director for the ACLU of Oregon. I appreciate the opportunity to speak more fully. I'm not sure I have much more to say. We did author a second opinion for your review, consistent with the first opinion done by the Davis Wright Tremaine Law Firm. We believe it does still violate not only the Oregon constitutions, but also the U.S. Constitution. And I do just want to reiterate, because I know this is a difficult issue for all of us, that there are some things we all do truly agree on. The ACLU does not want the Westboro Church here. We do not want Mr. Phelps here. We do not want their hateful speech coming to Oregon ever again. And as I noted, I think, last time, one of the things we see the Phelps do is very tactical. They want media attention. This is what they live for with their hateful speech. And they want funding because that allows them to engage in hateful speech across the country. And unfortunately, when jurisdictions have passed these laws in the recent year, the Phelps have gone in very quickly. And they've engaged in just the activity we hope to avoid. They have challenged the laws, and they have won. And it is not ACLU versus the state of Oregon or a client of ours. It is Phelps v. And I think I noted last time in the footnotes, I think 33 through 39 in the opinion, it is 2009, 2010, 2011. It is current case law. And it is all Phelps v. And they are winning. And when they win, they often win attorney's fees, and we're talking quarters of millions or millions of dollars because it's a lengthy litigation through the federal courts. So I do appreciate the intentions. I do appreciate the attempt to, I can only presume that our legal opinion was helpful for the original bill, and that is why the resulting dash threes were adopted. But it is our obligation to at least inform you from our best perspective and with the best minds we think we have in the state of Oregon assisting us often, that this is unconstitutional and that the Phelps will come in. So again, I just want to end with what I started with. I hope you understand we share the same goal as you all do. We just profoundly think that by doing this, it will unfortunately do what we all share in our value, which is to not help the Phelps come here. I'm happy to answer any questions, but I appreciate the chair's time, and I know this is a difficult issue, but respectfully, the ACLU does urge a no vote.
Thank you. Any questions of Ms. Meyer? Thank you very much for coming.
I do have one for the comment for the record, sir. I'm sorry.
Representative Smith. Yeah, I wanted to put another statement on the record. In doing it, one of the things that in our deliberations we considered in the amendments was that there could be confusion in the communication of the message and the expression exercise of the funeral holders, and that tried to narrowly tailor the amendments so that to limit that confusion, that there still could be protests, but that they would happen a little bit away from the funeral to ensure there wasn't confusion with those messages.
Representative Conger.
I just wanted to express my appreciation for the hard work that several of our colleagues have put into this, particularly Representative Smith. This with the dash three amendments, I think this is a very creative, very thoughtful approach to try to balance the interests of free speech with the interests of the families, and so I appreciate it very much. Appreciate the time that went into it, and I will be voting aye.
Thank you, Representative Sheehan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think it's our job as a legislature to help shape a society that we want to live in, and I don't want to live in a society that allows people to protest funerals. And I think by running from this type of legislation because we're worried that the Phelps are going to come in here is ridiculous, and I think we need to be brave for our veterans and pass this legislation.
Representative Smith.
speaking to the record, sir, want to make clear that given the amendments, there is no prohibition on protesting funerals. That there is a desire to give the families a zone of expression where they can control the message they want to deliver and control the type of experience that it is, and that those who want to protest funerals as is their First Amendment right can do so within a reasonable time, place, and manner restriction, several hundred feet away, and maintain their First Amendment right and balance that right with the interests and rights of the families and the funeral holders.
Thank you. Representative Clem.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to note for the record that I respect the free speech rights of Andrea and the ACLU, and I just don't have to agree with them in this particular circumstance, but I respect them and invite anyone to join the welcoming committee that Representatives Widener, Schaffler, myself, and Matthews would have for the Phelps if they'd like to visit our state to discuss some things.
Any other comments? I will put one on the record for myself. I have struggled with this bill immensely. I am very fearful that this does bring the Phelps to Oregon. But however, having a son in the Army, it does somewhat bother me to think that that a situation like that would happen and there would be nothing that we could do about it. So with that, I'm going to be supporting the bill. Tamara, can we have a roll call vote, please?
Representative Cameron.
Excused.
Representative Clem.
Aye.
Representative Conger.
Aye.
Representative Matthews.
Aye.
Vice Chair Sheehan.
Yes.
Vice Chair Smith.
Aye.
Co-Chair Wisnett.
Aye.
Co-Chair Holby.
Aye. House Bill 3241, having received the required votes, is passed to the floor with a two-pass recommendation.
Such a fight.
Are we going to have a fight over the carriers here?
It's illegal.
Jim and I will
vote. Widener.
Okay. Yeah.
Representative Widener. It's his bill.
What's that say?
Committee to co-carriers?
Yeah. So Representative Sheehan will carry the bill.
With Representative Widener. They want to be co-carriers?
With Representative Widener. We only have three or four carriers? No, that would be fine. Widener and Sheehan will carry the bill. That'll
repeat my
close House bill work session on House Bill 3241 if I didn't already. What do you want to do next?
Representative Brewer is here for 3180.
Barnhart here for
2321.
Oh, okay. So we'll just skip down to open a public hearing on House Bill 2321. Chan, give us a brief little description of House Bill 2321 and any amendment you may know of.
Mr. Chair and committee members, the bill requires public bodies to use email when sending notice if they have an email address for the person. It requires public bodies to include a space for an email address on their forms used to collect mailing addresses. It allows a person to request a paper notice. There is a -2 amendment before you that replaces the original measure. It allows a public body to use electronic mail to send a notice under certain circumstances, primarily with the agreement of the recipient. And there is no revenue impact. There's a minimal fiscal impact with no statement issued.
Mr. Chair. No public hearing, it won't move.
Good morning. I was going to say good afternoon. It seems like it already. Good morning. If you'd identify yourself for the record, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Phil Barnhart, State Representative, House District 11.
And if you could briefly tell us what we're doing with the -2 amendment.
Well, what I'm hoping is that the committee will substitute the -2 amendment for the bill and send the bill to the floor for with a due pass recommendation. Mr. Chair, we've been working on this bill primarily the the Department of Administrative Services and I, although a number of other people have also been involved in the bill. Department of Transportation, Department of Motor Vehicles, Association of Oregon Counties, Special Districts Association of Oregon, and as of late yesterday afternoon, the Judicial Department. What this bill does, essentially, is allow an additional option for a state or local government to make notices that are normally required to be made by mail, by email, under some specialized circumstances. And that is that they have offered that to be done. They have to first decide they want to do it at all, which is optional with the agency or the government. It's not required. Then they would have to offer an agreement to a person who might want to receive notices by email. Then that person would have to give them an email address and agree to maintain it so that they could receive emails at that address. And with the option, of course, of revoking that authorization at any time and requiring that required notices be sent by mail again. I think this is the first step, Mr. Chair, in the process of moving many of the required notices that various governments send from the mails to electronic communications. It is certainly not an end by any stretch of the imagination. It is an experiment, and it allows an agency to do an experiment if it wants to. It's not required. Doesn't make anyone do anything if they don't want to. It also would allow an agency to say, well, this notice is so important that we're not going to rely on the email address that we've got. We're going to send it by regular mail anyway. Now, there are some agencies that are already authorized to do these kinds of things and do them regularly, and notices that people want to receive by email because they get them more quickly. I think notices about public contracting is an example of that. The chairs, I'm sure, very familiar with. And there are others. I was thinking about situations that have arisen in my neighborhood where the city is required to send me notices about changes in zoning or building permits and things of that sort of my neighbors that I would just as soon receive by mail, by email rather than by mail. If I had a general release to the city of Eugene saying that they could send me any notice they had to send me at my email address, that would be more convenient for me, and of course it would save them money on postage and paper and handling and that kind of thing. So that's the essence of it. We think we've worked out nearly all of the kinks. An additional one came up late last night involving the Judicial Department. It's a minor matter involving their rules that require that lawyers have email addresses on record with them so they can communicate quickly by email the courts. We don't see any problem with getting a small amendment made to fix that in the Senate if the committee is willing to send the bill to the floor. Of course, time is of the essence because of the current rule that the committee is well aware of. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Mr. Petty, do you have any testimony?
Just very briefly, Mr. Chair, for the record, my name is Dugan Petty. I'm the Chief Information Officer with the State of Oregon. This bill initially was requiring electronic notice to be sent in all cases. There would have been unintended consequences with that. Representative Barnhart graciously set up a work group, and we were able to work through that and resolve the issues, making it discretionary, putting some pretty basic rules together. There are common sense rules about when you would receive that and when it would be sent. We were able to align it with the Uniform Electronic Transaction Act, which is something that the original bill did not take into consideration, which gives us some structure under which any actions of this would be evaluated. So we think it's a pretty good bill. We think it's a good first step. We think it encourages the kind of activity that is going to be cost effective for the state of Oregon.
Thank you. I appreciate both your hard work on this. I wouldn't have put wagers on this after our first public hearing that we would be moving this bill, but I'm very happy to see that you've worked out these details and we can move something that I think is really a good piece of legislation forward. Are you aware of any opposition to this bill at this point?
Mr. Chair, the only issue is the one that I indicated a minute ago. We don't think there's any problem carving out an exception for those that are required to give an email address and to communicate by email. That's an issue we haven't thought of, but it's an easy fix, and the Senate can certainly do that.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate that. We'll make sure we keep that on the record as well.
Yeah, is someone from Judiciary here can come up and put it on the record?
You want somebody from Judiciary?
Yeah.
I'm not sure we have anybody here.
Okay. Mr. Chair, we're talking about the Judicial Department, the courts.
Right.
That have that requirement. It seems to us as though this is a fairly simple fix.
Okay. Yeah.
And it may not even be required.
Yeah, and I think I'm pretty comfortable with that. Do we have a motion on the table yet?
You're in public hearing.
Oh, no, I didn't. You got to close the public
hearing. Okay. With that, I don't believe there's anyone else signed up for this bill.
That's correct.
We'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2321 and open a work session on House Bill 2321.
Mr. Chair, I move the -2 amendments dated April 5, 2011 to House Bill 2321.
Representative Wisnett moves the -2 amendments dated April 5, 2011 to House Bill 2321. Discussion? Seeing one. Representative Clem.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Others. I'm trying to just decipher the amendment. My intention is to provide a courtesy no vote and then decide if I change my mind later. I like to log and make paper, so I would like to print as many things as possible. Just a courtesy no. I may change my mind.
I don't know if that's a courtesy, actually, Representative Clem. Can I have a vote on the amendment, please?
Representative Cameron?
Excused.
Representative Clem?
Is the amendment?
No.
Yes.
Oh, I thought you were a no.
Representative Conger?
Aye.
Bill.
Representative Matthews?
Aye.
Bill. Vice Chair Sheehan?
Yes.
Vice Chair Smith?
Aye.
Co-Chair Wissett?
Aye.
Co-Chair Hobie?
Aye. Amendment having received required votes is adopted. Representative Wisnett.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2321 to the floor of a due pass as amended recommendation.
Representative Wisnett moves House Bill 2321 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion?
Same thing.
We'll note that your discussion is on the bill. With that, no other discussion. Can we have a vote, please?
Representative Cameron?
Excused.
Representative Clem?
Nope.
Representative Conger?
Aye.
Representative Matthews?
Aye.
Vice Chair Sheehan?
Yes.
Vice Chair Smith?
Aye.
Co-Chair Wizard?
Aye.
Co-Chair Holby?
Aye. House Bill 2321, having received required votes, is passed to the floor. I will close the work session on House Bill 2321, and Representative Barnhart, would you like to carry that?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And we're going to carry over House Bill 2780, so do we have an amendment to 2631?
2631, no.
It would be nice, yeah.
You can announce the carryover on this one.
I'm a Luddite. I'm going to open a public hearing on it here in a minute, but we're going to wait till the drafter's here.
Okay. Are you calling
out of it? Mm-hmm. Let's stand at ease for a minute.
status.
Mr. Chair and committee members, this is the bill that you heard. You have not heard this bill before. This is new to the committee. It reestablishes the Oregon Board of Accountancy as a semi-independent state agency. And it transfers money from the Oregon Board of Accountancy account to a depository account established by the board, and it directs the board to appoint a budget committee to make recommendations on a biennial budget, declares an emergency effective on passage, and there's a dash one amendment before you, and allows the board to determine by rule a fee for permit to engage in the practice of a public accountancy. Moves the operative date to January 1st of 2012.
Thank you, and we have three people signed up for testimony that I'm aware of so far. If you would introduce yourself for the record, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Representative Katie Airbrewer from House District 29, and if you would indulge me, I would like for the agency directors to go first.
Thank you, Representative. Your co-chairs, members of the committee, I'm Pat Hearn, Executive Director of the Oregon Board of Accountancy. House Bill 3180 would establish the Board of Accountancy as a semi-independent state agency. The measure has no impact on the general fund. It is supported by House members of both parties. And we have met with the governor's policy staff, and they have informed us that they have no problems with the legislation. We believe that the Board of Accountancy becoming semi-independent would result in some degree of operating economies, and of course we haven't been able to determine those in depth, but our current estimate, and we believe it's a conservative estimate, is that we could save $100,000 in the first biennium. One of the areas that we believe would result in significant savings would be facilities rent, and we also believe we could get services that we currently pay to DAS for such things as accounting and payroll services for significantly less cost in the commercial market. It also would enable us to comparison shop for goods and services, everything from office supplies to airline travel. We're confident that it would allow the board to either maintain or even reduce the fees that it charges licensees. Semi-independent agencies are tried and successful in Oregon. Agencies first became semi-independent in 1991, and there are currently 14 semi-independent state agencies in Oregon government. Semi-independent state agencies have been successful in other states as well. All regulatory boards in the state of Nevada are semi-independent, and the boards of accountancy in Texas, North Carolina, and North Dakota are semi-independent and are considered to be among the finest in the nation. The board believes that transparency of board conduct would be maintained, if not even improved. The board members would remain appointed by the governor and confirmed by the Senate. Biennial reports would be submitted by the board to the governor and the legislature, and the board would still be subject to Secretary of State audit requirements. The agency budget would be developed jointly by representatives of the profession and the board in a budget committee similar to that which is used in municipal and local government entities. The U.S. Treasury has urged states to create greater financial and operational independence of their state boards of accountancy. And the Enron and MCI WorldCom debacles of the last decade have emphasized the needs for strong regulation of the accounting profession. Finally, the bill is supported by both the profession, the Oregon Society of Certified Public Accountants, and by the Board of Accountancy, and there is no known opposition to the bill. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Good morning, if you identify yourself for the record.
Thank you. Co-chairs Holvey, Wisnes, members of the committee. My name is Ray Johnson. I'm chair of the Oregon Board of Accountancy. The Oregon Board supports this legislation. The Oregon Board has taken its public protection very seriously. We think that it's very important that the public be able to rely on reliable audits, reliable test functions, reliable tax work. We're very much in support of this. As Mr. Hearn just said, our experience nationally is the semi-independent agencies tend to be the most effective around the country, and we think that this would move Oregon in that direction. There's a high degree of transparency in this bill in terms of the finances of the board. We've mirrored municipal budget law in terms of trying to set up an appropriate mechanism for setting licensee fees, and we run strictly on licensee fees. I would also state that the board has not increased fees on licensees for over a decade. We think that this will allow us to be both efficient and effective, and I'm here to answer any questions that you would have. Thank you.
Thank you again for the record. My name is Representative Katie Eyre Brewer, and I am a CPA and a member of the Oregon Board of Accountancy, as well as a member of the Oregon Society of CPAs. As you are well aware, CPAs have high ethics that we are required from national ethics, and ethics are a big part of who we are as an organization. The integrity of our industry is paramount to the success of our industry and required for our functions that we provide. As Mr. Hearn mentioned, that the U.S. Treasury has urged greater independence of the boards of accountancies throughout the United States. Part of that is because of our test services that we provide. Our license is uniquely positioned to provide those services, and the states, the local municipal governments and such do require CPA licensing for those attest services. This presents another degree of separation for greater independence of that service. We believe also that this will provide greater transparency to the members. This agency, of all agencies, and sitting on one of the Ways and Means for General Government, have seen many agencies come before us. This agency has exercised fiscal prudence, fiscal stewardship, and truly is a model of what agencies should be doing when managing their funds and their monies. They are certainly an agency that not only has done it in the current expensive environment of having to rely on state services, but they want to be even more prudent and more fiscally sound by using services in a more competitive basis that the semi-independent structure will allow. This also models reducing the footprint of state government while maintaining the integrity of this board as needed as a function of the government. As a CPA, and as a member, someone who has to send my license in every other year for renewal, along with all my continuing professional education requirements and my money, it would offer me no concern whatsoever to have this agency be semi-independent, still under the purview of the board, which is appointed and approved and confirmed by the Senate. I think it would be good for our members, good for the state, and add a greater degree of separation for independence to provide the attest services and assurance services that we do.
Thank you. Any questions for this panel? Representative Conger.
Mr. Hearn, I think I heard you say, and I just want to make sure I understood the words that came out of your mouth. Did you say that if you were allowed to purchase in the marketplace, you could save money on accounting, payroll services, office supplies, and other goods and services, as opposed to being forced to purchase those through DAS?
Co-chairs, Representative Conger, yes, you heard correctly. We believe that's true.
That is shocking to me.
A follow-up?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Follow-up, could you mention a couple of, or did you, I may have missed it, but I know there are some semi-independent boards already. Could you mention them again? We have some examples.
Co-chairs, Representative Conger, currently the Travel Information Council, the Oregon Film and Video Office, the Oregon Board of Optometry, the Board of Examiners for Engineering and Land Surveying, Board of Geologist Examiners, Landscape Architect Board, Board of Massage Therapists, Physical Therapist Licensing Board, Landscape Contractors Board, Appraiser Licensure and Certification Board, the Oregon Tourism Commission, the Oregon Patient Safety Commission, and the Oregon Wine Board. Those are the 14 existing semi-independent agencies.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Other questions? One question. Will this move to a semi-independent board have any impact on enforcement?
Co-Chair Holvey, absolutely not. The board currently has an in-house full-time investigator who is a CPA. When specific expertise is needed, such as for a case that may involve a complex audit, we will contract with experts on the outside. We don't see that changing in any way.
So you do not see a reduction in enforcement as a result of this passage of this bill?
Co-Chair Holvey, absolutely none.
Thank you.
If I may also respond to that, Mr. Chair, is that we as members would not want a reduction in enforcement either. Just for the record, we like any stray accountants or CPAs to be held accountable before leaving the flock.
Thank you, strays leaving the flock. Any other questions? I appreciate your testimony this
Thank
morning.
You.
Thank you, Mr. Thank you. Chair.
Was there anyone else signed up to testify on House Bill 3180? Not seeing any. I will close the public hearing.
A letter, just double check.
Not seeing any others, I'll close the public hearing on House Bill 3180 and open a work session on House Bill 3180. Representative Wisnich.
Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 1 amendment stated April 5th, 2011 to House Bill 3180.
Representative Wisnich moves the adoption of the Dash 1 amendment dated April 5th, 2011 to be adopted to House Bill 3180. Discussion. Seeing none, is there any objection? The Dash 1 amendment is adopted, and we will close the work session. House
nope.
Bill.
Are you just not ready?
3180.
Sorry.
Waiting for paperwork. So, 3180. Maybe at this point, go backwards a little bit. If there are people waiting for House Bill 2859, we're not working that bill due to paperwork. Same is true for House Bill 3038. We are not working that bill. We're waiting for paperwork. Same is true for House Bill 3317. We are not working that bill. We're waiting for paperwork. And the same is true, I believe, of House Bill 3195. We are waiting for paperwork.
That's correct.
So do we
need to announce that we're not going to have a hearing on 3469? Is anyone here on that?
So is it on our agenda still? We will not be having a hearing or working House Bill 3469. House Bill 2003.
Identify what you're doing in 2003.
We are not working that bill today. House Bill 2780. We will be rolling over, carrying over till tomorrow for first public hearing. House Bill 2466. We will be carrying over. House Bill 2945. We will be carrying over.
2958, ready to move? No?
No.
House Bill 2958 will be carrying over. House Bill 2957 will be carrying over.
Actually, 2958, you can move. There was an amendment. You could adopt the amendment.
Which one?
2958.
No, we can adopt the amendment.
Or you can let the Rules Committee adopt the amendment.
Yeah, I think that's what...
I thought you said you were going to do that.
It doesn't matter to me.
We'll just let the rules do it.
Yeah. So we just need to wait for the paperwork.
Yeah. Okay.
Do we have the paperwork on 3411?
No, but the amendment needs to be adopted.
Okay, I'll open a work session on House Bill 3411. Representative Wisnett.
Jan first?
Or Jan, why don't you describe the bill? Yes, that'd be nice.
Committee members, chairs, House Bill 3411 has been heard in the committee before. It's the bill that prohibits, that prohibits the portable electronics vendor from selling, issuing, or offering insurance coverage without a license from DCBS. And there is a dash 3 amendment that is before you, and Sean Miller here is to speak to that.
Representative Wisner, motion.
You're still in the public hearing, or did you go to public hearing? Did you go to work session?
No, I opened a work session, I believe.
Yeah, do we have to do a public hearing since you announced?
No, we already heard it.
We don't have to because it was
okay. Mr. Chair, I move dash 3 amendments dated March 31st, 2011. To House Bill 3411.
Representative Wisnet has moved the dash 3 amendments dated March 31st, 2011 to House Bill 3411, and I'd like to have Sean Miller come up at that point for discussion. Good morning. If you identify yourself for the record, please.
Good morning, Mr. Co-Chairs, members of the committee. Sean Miller. I'm here today on behalf of Assurion, which is an insurance producer for portable electronic devices such as your cell phone or iPad. You have the written testimony and oral testimony from a few weeks ago. We made some adjustments to the Dash 3 amendments, again, working with the insurance division. And I know Joyce Patton is here if there's also any questions from the insurance division standpoint. But the original bill, obviously supported by the industry, insurance industry, as well as the cell phone carriers and retailers that sell this insurance. It's good for businesses to put this product under the insurance code. It's currently exempt, and this also gives consumers consumer protections that they did not otherwise have if they choose to buy this increasing insurance product for cell phones and mobile electronic devices. If there's any questions, Mr. Chair, co-chairs, I'll leave it at that, or I'm happy to answer specifics in the Dash 3 amendments. But essentially, this is modeled after the rental car limited lines insurance statute, which is a current form of limited lines at the insurance division. And so, again, puts this into the insurance code and offers those consumer protections. Thank you.
Questions for Mr. Miller?
Yeah, I guess I had to ask about the Dash 3 amendments.
Yes.
We made the motion.
Yes.
Your question?
I'd ask about the Dash 3. You said you offered more detail on the Dash 3 amendments. That'd be handy.
Yeah, Mr. Co-Chairs, when we had the Dash 2s, Representative Smith, Dash 2s, when we had those, we needed to further define limited license, which is on Section 1, Lines 11, 12, which means the vendor who issues and sells this portable electronics device, the license and code, putting this into code, does not authorize anybody to sell any other forms of insurance, such as property casualty, home. We need to further define that. And we also went into, on page 3, lines 22 through 23, we basically talked about the vendor who actually has this and can sell this particular form of insurance, such as it's mainly AT&T, Verizon, and your cell phone carriers, that the employees can't make themselves out to be as if they are licensed. And so, again, it's the umbrella of the company license. The employees have the training, but they can't actually make themselves out to say that, you know, I am a licensed producer, insurance producer. And that's exactly how the car rental statutes work, and it's exactly how the insurance division would like this particular form of limited lines to work.
Thank you. So we have any other discussion? We have a motion on the table to adopt the Dash 3 amendment. Any other discussion? Is there any objection to adopting the Dash 3 amendment? Seeing none, the Dash 3 amendment is adopted.
Mr. Chair.
And we are waiting for paperwork on this bill.
That's correct.
So we will close the work session on House Bill 3411. I'd like to... have we skipped over anything that we need to announce? Oh, yeah. Are any of them here? let's go back and open a work session on House Bill 3111.
Copy's here.
Representative, Representative Wisnett, do you have a motion on House Bill 3111? Adopt the dash four, I believe.
In my pocket, though. So they're still warm.
Mr. Chair, I move the dash four is in the House bill. Dash four is dated April 18th, 2011, in the House Bill 3111.
Representative Wisnett moves the adoption of the dash four amendment to House Bill 3111. And I believe that we need to withdraw that motion, go back and suspend the rules.
Are you
there? Yeah, okay. So, Representative Wisnett, can I get a motion for you to withdraw your amendment? Or
I would, Mr. Chair, I'm withdrawing my motion to include the dash fours.
So, Representative Wisnett has withdrawn his original motion, and he moves the rules be suspended for the purpose of reconsidering the vote on the dash three amendments to House Bill 3111. Any objection? Hearing none, the rules are suspended.
Mr. Chair, I move we reconsider the vote by which dash three amendments to House Bill 3111 were adopted.
Representative Wisnett moves we reconsider the vote by which the dash three amendments to House Bill 3111 were adopted. Is there any objection? Hearing none, the vote has been reconsidered. Representative Wisnett.
Mr. Chair, I move the dash four amendments dated April 18, 2011 to House Bill 3111.
Representative Wisnett moves the dash four amendments dated April 18, 2011 to House Bill 3111. Discussion. Is there anyone that would like to describe the dash four amendment?
Where's the barrels?
I know it.
Thank you. If you'd identify yourself for the record, please.
Yes. Good morning, Chair Holby, Chair Wisnett, committee members. My name is Glenn Colbert. I'm director of the Oregon Veterinary Medical Association. Following the hearing last week, we met individually with Representative Clem and Representative Smith to talk about some concerns about the issue relative to euthanasia of animals as part of a removal part aspect of this. Following those conversations, the dash four amendments would include removal by means of placing the domestic animal with a rescue group or animal shelter, by means of adopting out the domestic animal, or if either of those removals couldn't reasonably be achieved, then humane euthanasia could occur. And the intent behind it is to say our recommendation to veterinarians, and our intent preference is to place the domestic animal with a rescue group or shelter, adopt it out, and euthanasia is the last resort.
Thank you. Representative Clem, a question.
No, well, maybe a question, but I spoke with Dave Barrows a little about this yesterday. The only other thing we talked about that I believe we talked about could be done by rule, I just don't recall if we had talked about doing it in the Senate or by rule, was specifically offering up to no-kill shelters first. In the part where it talks about offering to a shelter, another sort of leg that's so placing a domestic animal with a rescue group or animal shelter with preference given to no-kill shelter. And if there's no room at a no-kill shelter, then adopting out, and then lastly the unpleasantness that is the last resort. So that's not in the bill, but we did talk about doing that by rule, I think, or some other means of doing that.
Chair Holvey, Chair Wisnett, Representative Clem, I think we would be amenable to that. I'm not sure if it could be done in rule or by amendment. And if it were to be done by amendment, we'd hope that we could address that and would look to consider that in the and address that in the Senate.
Yeah.
Representative Smith.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. The other change I hope we would consider, and if time doesn't permit us to do it here, then in good faith we'd consider on the Senate side, is the number of days prior to the movement of last resort, right?
Yeah.
So it's, if we can find a shelter with the 4-day, with the 4-day limit, that seems really reasonable. But, should it be an extra, and I can understand why I wouldn't want to do 15 days before last resort, but there might be a space between 4 and 15 days that I hope we would consider, even if it's just 6 or 7 days, even if it's just 8 days. So it's not just, a long weekend plus a day. And I get business days, but, it's not just Monday to Friday and I'm out of town or whatever. That it's a little bit longer than that, it would seem, before that move was picked. Because we've been treating them the same, right? We've been treating moving to a shelter as the same decision to putting it down. Something weird happens in a family's life and they want their dog back, they can still get it from a shelter. After some things, you can't get it back. And I recognize it won't ever come up for the vast bulk of vets, but we're not here to, we don't do regulations for the best vets. We do it for the ones we got to do it for.
If I can comment on that, Chair Holvey, Chair Wisnett, Representative Smith, in just thinking about that at this moment, I guess in just the one thought, I think we'd be amenable to further discussion on that first. The one thought, if an animal's health was seriously medically compromised, that extension...
You have an exception.
We just would want some time to think that one through, how that possibly could be accomplished. But we certainly would be amenable to really talking with you and looking at that for a minute in the Senate.
Thank you. Any other discussion? Not seeing any. We have a motion to adopt the Dash 4. Is there any objection to adopting the Dash 4 amendment? Seeing none, the Dash 4 amendment is adopted.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3-1.
Oh, we're not ready.
Thanks. With that, I'll close the work session on House Bill 3111. Waiting for paper.
Just in a minute.
So, with that, I will...
every single day.
Yeah. He lives in Seattle.
Oh, okay.
Maybe under here.
34-64.
I'd like to open a public hearing on House Bill 3461. Jan, can you give us a description of House Bill 3461?
Mr. Chair and committee members, this is the bill that deals with the surcharges on the Klamath Dam removal. There's a Dash 6 amendment before you. It replaces the original measure. It directs the PUC, when setting the surcharge rate, to account for actual and expected changes in energy usage over time and to account for actual and expected changes in the interest rates on the collected funds. The Dash 7 amendment before you, it allows the PUC to establish trust accounts for the collected surcharges with the state treasurer to be invested according to statutory regulations. It allows the PUC to establish each of the two trust accounts with a different trustee.
Mr. Nelson, and you should pick up time flies.
So we open up a public hearing.
Okay, would... Mr. Nelson, Mr. Want the PUC, is that Mark Hellman come up? Are you not going to testify, Mr. Nelson? Okay, so
Paul Graham
and Michael Savaggio. Can we get them all up here? Thank you, gentlemen. Please can you get up? Okay, please identify yourself and give us your concise testimony. We've heard that this is the second public hearing, and we appreciate all the work on the amendments. And let's get Mike. Would you give us? I think yours is the first one, isn't it? 6. Please. Thank you.
Co-Chair Wisnett, members of the committee, for the record, right. Michael Salvaggio from the Office of the State Treasurer. I'm here to speak to the Dash 7 amendments to House Bill 3461. This allows the Public Utility Commission to choose the State Treasury as a investment vehicle for the their trust fund regarding the Klamath River Dam removal. And I'm really here to answer any questions because I think it's a pretty straightforward process. They give us money, and we'll invest it, and we'll do a good job, and they can have it back according to the liquidity schedule, and we'll work with the PUC to set up exactly what kind of liquidity they need, exactly what kind of investment profile they're looking for, and
okay.
I'll answer any questions
you
have.
Thank you very much, Mike. Mark, you want to go next? Or?
Co-chairs and members of the committee, my name is Mark Hellman of the Public Utility Commission, and with me to my right is Paul Graham of Attorney General's Office. I have four brief points to make. First, the Commission supports the -6 and -7 amendments. Second, we interpret the -6 amendments to retain Commission discretion to consider relevant factors in setting rates, while requiring the Commission to consider present and future load growth as well as actual and forecasted interest rates. Third, on the -7 amendments, the Commission interprets the language to allow funds to be deposited in one or more of the options listed as A, B, and C. And finally, fourth, it appears that the -7 is amending and replacing 757-738-1.
Okay, we'll come back for questions. Thank you. Unless the committee wants to ask questions on that right now. So, sir, Mr. Hellman, you're saying then that you're okay with the 6 and 7s, but it's, what were you saying, it's replacing the...
It appears that the -7 is replacing the 757-738-1. That is replacing that section of the statutes.
Which is okay?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. Graham?
Paul Graham, Oregon Department of Justice, representing the PUC. I'm going to begin with a short disclaimer, and that is DOJ has no position on this bill, and I'm here to talk about the legal aspects. Dr. Hellman has told you that he has two legal interpretations of the -6 and -7 amendments, and I agree with those legal interpretations. Let me briefly repeat. The -6 tells the Commission that you must look at changes in usage and you must look at changes in interest rate in determining the level of the surcharge. And Dr. Hellman indicated that does not preclude the Commission from looking at other factors not identified in the bill, and I agree with that interpretation. And with respect to the -7s, he has said that the language in lines 13 and 14 means that the PUC, in establishing trusts to hold the money that's been collected for dam removal surcharges, can involve a combination of the factors that are listed in the -7 amendments. You can see that they're factor A, factor B, factor C, that are found on lines 12 through 17. And his interpretation, with which I agree, is that the Commission can mix and match among those three alternatives. It can use one, two, or all three of them.
And these are options about the investment we're talking about.
Correct.
Thank you. Okay. Committee members, do you want to, Michael, I should probably wait and let Michael Early come up or speak with Scott. Do you have any questions for Mr. Graham from AG at this point? Okay. Go ahead, Michael. Do you want to identify yourself?
I'm Michael Early. I'm the Executive Director of the Industrial Customers of Northwest Utilities. Our membership includes a number of customers served by PacifiCorp, and we pay the surcharge that's at issue here. I'm here to indicate that we support the -6 and -7 amendments. Thank you.
Thank you, Michael. Okay. Committee members, do you have questions of this panel, or you want to... We need to get, okay, thank you very much. Scott Bolton and Jeff Bessonette.
Okay. Chair Holby, committee members, has it. For the record, Scott Bolton for PacifiCorp, and I'll be very brief in my comments. We do support the -6 and -7 amendments to House Bill 3461. I feel like this is a product of a lot of work and consensus among parties, including the Klamath Hydro Settlement Agreement parties. We believe that the amendments represent some incremental customer benefit, adding to the PUC's authority and providing them more flexibility both in how the trust accounts are invested and providing a little bit more enhanced direction on annual looks at adjusting those surcharges based on interest and load forecasts. So we appreciate everybody's work and support the amendments. Thank you.
Mr. Co-Chairs, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Jeff Bissonnette, representing the Citizens Utility Board of Oregon. We represent residential ratepayers. I'll be even briefer, us too. We do support the Dash 6s and Dash 7s. Thank you.
Any questions? Did you have a question?
Or a comment, yeah.
Comment, Representative Wisnett.
Well, thank you. Mr. Chair and committee members, we've heard the bill before. You heard what we're talking about here as far as getting more money for the money that the increased rate industry and consumers are providing for this project. And I do appreciate the work of everyone on this in a short time to bring forth a solution. I think it's good for industry. I think it's good for consumers. And I think appreciate Pacific Core and their role in trying to find a solution here. I think in the long term, it will benefit a lot of people.
Thank you. I appreciate that, and I appreciate your testimony as well. With that, I'll close public hearing on House Bill 3461 and open a work session on House Bill 3461. Representative Wisnett, do you have a motion?
Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 6 amendments dated April 15, 2011 to House Bill 3461.
Representative Wisnett moves the Dash 6 amendments dated April 15, 2011 to House Bill 3461. Any discussion? Is there any objection? Seeing none, Dash 6 amendments are adopted.
Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 7 amendments dated April 15, 2011 to House Bill 3461.
Representative Wisnett moves the Dash 7 amendments dated April 15, 2011 to House Bill 3461. Discussion? Any objection? Seeing none, Dash 7 amendments are adopted. And with that, we will close the work session on House Bill 3461.
We don't have a disc one.
So with that, I'd like to open a public hearing on House Bill 3387. Jan, can you describe House Bill 3387, please?
Mr. Chair and committee members, the bill designates the Trust for Cultural Development account as a trust account exclusively for arts and culture purposes. It declares legislative intent to create contractual obligation to use monies only for arts and culture purposes and to prevent the transfer of monies from account for other uses. It declares an emergency effective immediately. Dash 1 amendment is before you. It exempts from the prohibition on transfer from trust monies contributed by taxpayers that qualified for credit against taxes otherwise due.
Thank you. Good morning and welcome. If you'd identify yourself for the record, please.
I will. Co-Chair Holby and Wisnett, my name is Norm Smith. My day job was with the Ford Family Foundation in Roseburg, where I left this morning in a dark sky above with a full moon above, and I'm delighted that you found a way to squeeze this in for just a minute. Your colleagues, Representatives Kinnemer and Boone, I think, would like to be here to be heard briefly. I hope they're on their way. So if I may proceed without them.
Certainly. We're going to carry this over till tomorrow, so they'll have another opportunity.
Very good, sir. Thank you. Co-chairs and members of the committee, I also serve as the chair of the Oregon Cultural Trust, and that's, of course, an appointed position confirmed by the Senate, unpaid citizen work, and it's for a wonderful, wonderful cause. It is for something that Oregon can take great pride in because it is, as a policy, rivaling beach bill, bottle bill, and it's been noted as such. It is a uniquely Oregon policy. There's a lot of history behind this. I had the privilege of being appointed to and serving on the task force that originally began putting this together. And when the legislature passed this, it had in mind, I think, something that we appreciate a great deal at the Ford Family Foundation, and that is the power of leverage. The legislature created a policy that asks citizens of the state of Oregon to support that in which they believe, their own culture, their own heritage. And for that, they are asked to make two contributions out of their own pockets. First, to any listed cultural organization in any county or within the nine tribes across the state. And after they make a contribution to that of any amount up to a cap, they are offered the chance by this policy to give a like amount, write a second check out of their pocket that goes to the Oregon Cultural Trust. And then, and only then, does the legislature grant in its policy a tax credit up to a capped amount that is the leverage you gain. In other words, two checks have been written before you allow money to leave the Treasury. For that, what you get in return is a tremendous payback across all 36 counties. We have cultural coalitions made up of citizens who receive a portion of that money to re-grant to cultural organizations in every one of the legislative districts in the state, in each of the counties and the nine tribal units. In addition to those coalitions, which is an activist group, we have partners in state agencies who share in some of the proceeds from this, and they re-grant that back to districts across the state. We also make direct competitive grants from the Cultural Trust. And so for all of this, what you have set in motion is a way for the state to leverage the activism at the community level of the citizens of Oregon. And what are they active around? They're active around the culture of the state, which, after all, in the last analysis, good times or bad, it is our perceived culture that binds us together. So it has a very powerful motivating force for individuals, and we hope that it has the same for the legislature. And therefore, this bill is put in front of you, thank you to one of the sponsors next to me, to assure that citizens of Oregon believe there is a contract, to believe that the Oregon Cultural Trust is not just a trust in name only, that indeed they can have confidence that when they contribute, when they purchase a license plate with the intention of that money going into the trust, that it will go there, and that they can have greater confidence and make further contributions. And with that, I thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And Representative Boone, I know that you're here to testify on this bill. We are carrying this bill over to tomorrow. I wanted to get people who traveled for more than 100 miles on the record. Okay. If you're able to testify tomorrow, I'd appreciate that.
I will. What, same time, morning?
Actually, it'll be tomorrow at 6 p.m. 6 p.m.
Same difference. I'd be happy.
So I appreciate it. Okay. Did we have anybody else signed up?
Michael Savaccio.
On 3387.
910.
Michael Savaggio, are you able to testify tomorrow? I know it's late, but you don't get overtime, do you? No, that's a serious question. You don't get overtime, do you? Okay. So you can come back tomorrow then. Thank you. I appreciate your testimony, and I recognize the situation that's before us, and I appreciate at least getting a chance to get your testimony on the record.
I appreciate that. Thank
Seeing
you.
No,
flag a question without answer for tomorrow.
I have another bill up that I'd like to get to, but go ahead and ask your question.
For tomorrow, we're going to carry it over, not have further discussion on this apparently, but the question I have is, you know, the rumor has it that we are not allowed to bind future legislative bodies. We can do that through the Constitution. We can do it by a rule. They can change the rule. We can also do it sometimes by a contractual obligation, which I think is what I understand is this bill is intended to do, which would trigger a lawsuit, which would allow for a lawsuit by potentially anybody who submitted money into the who got the tax credit, and if that money was used another way, so I want to hear about, you know, our anticipated lawsuit. That's what happened with PERS, for instance, and so want to hear about how we anticipate handling those lawsuits, or if we are intending to have that kind of lawsuit triggering device.
Thank you. I appreciate that, and with that, I'll close the public hearing on House Bill 3387. Thank you, Representatives. I'm sorry to make you run down here for, but it looked good. So
we don't care.
With that, I think we have a very. Now we have two problems.
All right, more.
I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 3574. Jan, can you give us an extremely brief scenario of 3574?
committee heard this earlier. It requires contracting agency to use alternative contracting method to award energy savings performance contract. Dash 1 amendment is before you, deletes provisions regarding alternative contracting methods and allows exception to competitive bidding process for energy service companies pre-qualified by Department of Energy by roll. Excuse me, the committee did not hear this before. This is the first time.
Thank you. And up first, we have Margie Hoffman and Stephen Capori, please. And if you'd introduce yourself for the record, please. Thank you.
Chair Holvey, members of the committee, my name is Margie Hoffman, and I represent the Northwest Energy Efficiency Council, so I want to thank you for taking the time to hear this today. This is a very simple bill. There is a pre-qualification list for energy service companies that they can, is a quick way for the Department of Energy to do direct awards. To qualify for this pre-qualification list, companies have to do several things. Number one, they have to, it's a lengthy RFQ process, so a request for qualification process. They have to demonstrate that they have a team of people who are qualified with years of experience to conduct the ESCO work. They also have to demonstrate a proven track record of having done a number of projects throughout the state that they have achieved energy savings. And number three, they have to hand over their books to the state to show that if they contract with a public agency and they do not meet the energy savings goal that's expressly stated in that contract, that they will be able to afford to write a check to the public agency to make up that gap. This bill is before you today. It actually just changes one simple thing in statute. Right now in statute it says that any state agency contracting with an ESCO, and we want to change state agency to contracting agencies so that we have the clarification. For example, if a public school district wanted to sign a contract with an ESCO, that we don't have, we don't get at odds with statute in that rulemaking process, or that if a local jurisdiction wanted to sign a contract with an ESCO, that they would be able to draw from this pre-qualification list. The other thing I want to point out is that this is not a mandate. This does not mandate that public agencies draw from the pre-qualification list. They are able to either go through a competitive bidding process or they can draw directly from the pre-qualification list. So happy to take any questions, and thanks again for your time.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Stephen Cafori. I'm representing the Apollo Solutions Group, which is an ESCO. I just wanted to say two things and then have introduced Alex Banks, who's the director of our company. Those two things are that we've worked very closely with the governor's office. They're supportive of the bill. We've worked very closely with the Department of Energy, and they have no problems with the bill. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Alex Banks, the director of Apollo Solutions Group. I'm an energy services company. We employ roughly 550 employees in the Northwest. My team has developed about $150 million in energy conservation projects over many decades, generating over $200 million in energy savings. Unfortunately, I feel a disproportionately small percentage of those projects have happened in the state of Oregon, the state in which I live and grew up. And this bill simply provides a clarification to agencies to be able to employ the method of energy savings performance contracting, and hope that we're able to do that so that we can conserve more energy, create more jobs, and do it in a fiscally responsible fashion here in the state.
Questions from the committee? So I know time is relatively short on us here. Just a question from my perspective. I'm trying to understand why these types of contracts are different, so that they wouldn't utilize normal contracting laws, and why we need special laws and a pre-qualification list, which potentially means, I think, in this bill that you could just have one applicant or one proposal and the contract would be awarded without any other request for proposals.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, let me briefly answer that, and Alex may want to go into a little more detail, but this is not a new concept. The statute presently, and has for a number of years, exempted energy savings performance contracts from the public contracting law. The reason for that is that when a contract for an energy savings project is entered into, it's a very complex contract. It requires both the agency and the company to enter into a pretty detailed negotiation before there's a price. You have no idea what the price is when you first go in. There may be 40 or 50 or 60 different variables, and those variables are going to be worked out between the two clients, between the two parties to the contract. And so there would be no way of coming up with a price until after you figure out what that mixture of 40, 50 different variables is. Are you going to do the ceilings? Are you going to do the windows? Are you going to do heating and air conditioning? Are you going to do different kinds of lighting controls? All those kinds of things are variables, and it doesn't work. The legislature realized that years ago. This is not a new concept for us here. It's just really clarifying what the law is now. The law right now is very difficult to understand, and we cannot go as a company to a client and say you can hire us. It would, you're right, Mr. Chair, allow for a company such as us to go to a client and say, here's what we can offer you. Would you like the intervention negotiations?
And if I may, to Chair Holvey, members of the committee, there is a very competitive bidding process to get on the pre-qualification list. And the reason that that competitive bidding process, that process is so thorough, is that these contracts are different in such that the construction work that's going on in these public entities is with the express intent of achieving cost-effective energy efficiency, meaning that the work will eventually pay for itself in the savings that you achieve. The reason that these contracts are different and that we need these contracts to protect state entities is that if a construction company enters into a contract with a public entity to achieve 65% energy savings, and they go through all of the construction process and they come out the other side and they only achieve 50% of energy savings, they are on the hook for writing a check to the public entity to make up for that gap between what they said that they were going to achieve and are contractually obligated to achieve and what they actually do. So these contracts protect public entities when they're entering into these energy efficiency agreements to make sure that the work that the companies say that they're going to do, they actually deliver on. Then the money is provided back.
And that really wasn't actually my question, but I appreciate that clarification. And we're going to carry this bill over so we can have a little bit more discussion about it with that. So I do appreciate you introducing the bill to us and getting it on our radar screen. I know the hour is late, but I'm comfortable.
That barbecue is killing me.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, I have one other person that wants to talk. And we're going to have another meeting on this tomorrow. So thank you very much. I want to get one more person that wanted to speak on this real quickly.
Thank you for your time.
Could you identify yourself for the record, please?
Yes. Chair Holvey, Brian Krieg, today representing the Sheet Metal and Air Conditioning Contractors Association, the Plumbing and Mechanical Contractors Association, also the Sheet Metal Workers Local 16, and the State Association of IBEW. All these organizations support this legislation. This type of contracting process is very hard to. There's high level of standards to get onto that list, and you do want, if you're going to go into these contracts, a company and an organization and a workforce that can actually get the job done and deliver on it. We have those people. There are more than one company out there doing this, and there will be more that are joining the ranks of that over the future. So labor and management both support.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And with that, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 3574.
Less is right.
And committee will stand at ease just for a moment while we look at our carryover list. Government and Consumer Protection, and I've got a motion to suspend the rules to allow Representative Cameron to vote on 3241. Was that motion from Representative Sheehan?
Yes.
Representative Sheehan has suspended the rules for the purpose of allowing Representative Cameron to vote on House Bill 3241. Any objection? Seeing none, the rules are suspended. Representative Cameron, how do you vote?
It's an honor to vote aye.
Representative Cameron votes aye on House Bill 3241. With that, I will close the work session, I guess, that I opened on House Bill 3241. So, with that, committee, we will be carrying over House Bill 2859. Can you check these off as you go? Make sure I get them all.
2859.
House Bill 3000. House Bill 3038. House Bill 3317. House Bill 3415. Move that. House Bill 2466. Did we want to carry that one over? House Bill 2003. House Bill 3111. House Bill 3195. House Bill 2780. House Bill 2631. House Bill 2945. And Representative Clem, I hope you're going to be meeting with the cities and on that one to go over the Dash 1 amendments. House Bill 2957. House Bill 2958. House Bill 3387.
Missed 3180.
House Bill, we didn't move that. House Bill 3180. House Bill 3461. House Bill 3574.
Wait a minute, you missed 3411.
3411. Did I not say House Bill 3411?
And,
I think I said it.
HJR 6.
What about 3575? House Bill 3575 and HJR 6.
Hey, did you get in the Culture Trust Fund 3387?
I did.
Okay. Did you just do anything before that?
So do we have the amendment? With that, I will adjourn the House Committee on General Government and Consumer Protection.
Ow.